Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win. Like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you today. Darren McFarland is out. And now I have...
You have the mic.
I have the mid-chair with the sagging mic, with the poor spring, the bad spring. So my left arm is going to have a little extra. My shoulder will get a good workout today because I have to hold the mic up. It will continue to sag at the inopportune moment. Adam Vingan with The Athletic is with us here today, and we're going to talk a little hockey. But first, he is kind of fired up because, as I said, he likes Duke. And Zion Williamson made his debut last night. It's weird. Adam, I watched the first three quarters, not all of it, because I was watching mostly the Vanderbilt game, but I was flipping over. And Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson were like, I know they're taking it easy, you know, they have their plan, but they got to let him get in the flow a little bit here. So after three quarters, he had, what, like 5 points? I barely saw him in there.
He didn't have much of an impact in the beginning of the game, but in the fourth quarter, as the Pelicans...
After I turned it off, by the way.
After the Pelicans attempted to rally, Zion scored 17 consecutive points for the Pelicans. And it was, and the funniest part about it was, at certain points during that stretch, Alvin Gentry, the head coach of the Pelicans, was sending guys to the scorer's table to sub in, presumably for Zion, but he kept on hitting shots, so they kept on pulling them back. But, you know, his last three put them up by one. They ended up losing the game. But I was certainly watching that game with vested interest as a Duke fan. And to answer your previous question on how we can spice up college basketball, the obvious answer is just crown Duke the national champion every single year. Then we don't have to worry about it. That's spicy enough for me. I mean, I think this year is great for college basketball in the sense that how many number one teams have already lost this season, ranked number one? I think probably more than ever, right, already?
Oh, yeah, it's a big turnover, for sure.
And I think that helped. I mean, there's always intrigue entering the NCAA tournament, but I feel like this year there's no clear-cut dominant team, which I think will make this year's tournament particularly exciting. Of course, Duke lost two consecutive games last week. They lost to Clemson, and they lost to Louisville. So anything can happen, especially in Kansas. But
yikes.
Yes, that didn't turn out so well. But anyway, very happy to spend the next hour talking about Zion Williamson. Thank you for having me on the air.
Well, that's not exactly why we brought you on.
Oh, okay.
But we could come back to that a little bit later, I suppose. But,
I do like other sports, so yes, I can talk.
You're
well-rounded. Wax poetic, yes, about other sports.
Well, let's talk about something you wrote about today, because this is a really good time with the bye week going on to sort of sit back and take a little closer look at different aspects. There's a lot of things that factor into why a team, in the case this team that you follow and cover, is where they are in the standings. So you took a closer look at some of the numbers for Ryan Johansson. I think everybody who watches the team, and you even had a good quote from Ryan saying, you know, what I've done is what I've done. He knows he's got to do more. He knows he's capable of more. So you took a look at some of the underlying numbers from a couple different sources.
Yeah, and I'm excited that I've recently teamed up with SportLogic, which we've talked about in the past. They do some really great analytics. I feel like they're more digestible than the analytics that I typically allude to or reference in my stories. And I wanted to look more at Ryan Johansson's season because points-wise, as I mentioned in the story or in a tweet promoting the story, that Ryan is on pace for fewer points this season than he had assists last season. He's on pace for 47 points this year. He had 50 assists last year. So it's been a down year for most of the roster, but I feel like if you're looking for a player who could be deemed the team's most disappointing, I do think Ryan Johansson is in that conversation. So I wanted to look more at some of his individual offensive numbers to see if there was anything that stood out as to why he is struggling. And some of the things that stood out to me are, one, per 60 minutes in all situations, he's actually attempting more shots from the slot and putting them on net than he has in his previous 3 years with the Predators. So he's actually
the whole thing of shoot, Joey, shoot. You know, there's that whole thing. Why doesn't he shoot more?
Right.
You know, so that's an interesting thing that you uncovered.
Right. So even though the shot attempts are not high necessarily, right, he is shooting the puck a little bit more this year from the high percentage areas at all situations than he has in previous years. The other thing that I uncovered with the help of Sport Logic, which I thought was interesting, is that the amount of time that Ryan Johansson has held onto the puck in the offensive zone has steadily declined year over year. It was 2 minutes and 9 seconds per 60 minutes in 16-17. This year, it's 1 minute, 53 seconds. So for a playmaker, you want to have the puck on your stick. He hasn't had the puck on his stick as much as he has in previous years. So I feel like from a goal-scoring standpoint, in terms of doing the right things, he's doing more this year than in previous years. As a playmaker, he's doing less than he has in previous years. So it's almost as if it cancels each other out.
Did you also find, I looked at your numbers too, that, and he is certainly not being used in a, quote, defensive checking role or anything, but he is starting in the defensive zone or outside of the offensive zone a higher percentage of the time. Isn't that true?
That is true. So this season, if I can find those numbers, he is starting 57.87% of his shifts in the in the offensive zone, compared to last year, which was 65.69%. So a significant dip. And one thing that I didn't mention in the story, it just didn't have a place for it necessarily, is that his overall ice time is down by about 2 minutes per game in all situations, and most of that comes at even strength. I think he's averaging just around 13 or so minutes per game at even strength. Last year, I think it was more than 15 minutes. And you're seeing a lot of their high-end forwards have their numbers, their ice time reduced, I think, just as Peter Laviolette previously and now John Hines is trying to have more balance among the lines. You know, both coaches aren't necessarily relying on the top six players as much. I think they're trying to have, you know, more ice time for the Bonino line and for the Turris line.
I think that brings up one of the more fascinating things that we really haven't discussed a lot, but I have heard this, and I don't think this is very different than what Peter Laviolette was envisioning. But the way that the forwards are constructed, you heard David Poile right from the start say, I think this is the deepest group of forwards we've had. Remember the discussion was before that, hey, they need more balance in the scoring. Where is the secondary scoring? Well, John Hines has said, I want a four-line attack. I want four lines that can put the opposition on their heels. Well, when you do that, that is a byproduct, right? That your, quote, top guys are going to play a little bit less, right? Nobody is going to get... You've written a lot with Kyle Turris. Kyle Turris, if he's your fourth line center, is not going to play, you know, the kind of minutes that he's used to playing as the second line center. So that is something that everybody's got to deal with. So I think it's an interesting thing. Like, I don't think any one guy has to have 70 points or 35 goals or anything like that. But collectively, that's what you're looking for, is everybody to pitch in, everybody to be a force. So it's more of a committee thing. And so I think you do have to look beyond how many goals and assists does each guy have. It's got to be better than it's been, but that the idea is that nobody has to carry the team, so to speak.
So I pulled up the even strength ice time per game numbers for some of the top forwards last year versus this year, just to give the listeners a sense of what I'm talking about. So last year, for example, Victor Arvidsson averaged 14 minutes and 58 seconds of even strength ice time per game. This year, 13-12. Nick Bonino, last year he averaged 12:42. This year 12:31, which I think speaks
about
to
the same.
About the same, which speaks to having more balance. Philip Forsberg a little bit more this year. A little bit less this year. 14:33 per game last year. 14:12 this year.
So not a huge difference there.
No, you know, some of the bigger ones, you know, here's Rocco Grimaldi. Last year, 9.58 at even strength per game. This year, 12 minutes, 30 seconds. So you're seeing that.
Yeah, because he's moved up from the fourth line to a steady third line role.
Right. Ryan Johansson last year, 15.05 per game. This year, 13.19. And then I'm just going to look for one more example. Craig Smith last year, 12.36. This year, 11.08.
Okay.
So you're seeing, for the most part, a lot of the Predators' top forwards, you know, see some sort of reduction in their even strength ice time. What's interesting is if you want to number the lines by ice time, Matt Duchene is averaging 59 seconds, if I remember exactly, 59 seconds of more even strength ice time per game than Ryan Johansson. And we've seen how much that line with Philip Forsberg and Mikhail Granlund is relied on in offensive situations. So, and in my personal opinion, I feel like that Ryan Johansson is more defensively responsible than Matt Duchene. So, as he did against, as John Hines
did. I think
did,
that's how they view it.
Right.
That would indicate why you see him starting in the defensive zone.
And I need to look up Matt
Even there's
Duchesne's.
A quote about you know, going head-to-head with the other team's top line sometimes.
Right.
So it's a balance. So you want to press and make that team defend, but you have some reliability defensively with those guys.
Right, and the flip side of that is, you know, I don't have these numbers in front of me, and maybe I can look at them over the break, but I feel that the quality of competition that Ryan Johansson is facing this season has also been reduced because I think most of the top pairs and shutdown lines are facing Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, and Mikhail Granlund. So in theory, you would think that Ryan Johansson would have an easier time, quote-unquote, putting up points without having to face the top shutdown players on the other side. And then you're hoping for more production from him in that regard. But, yeah, I think, you know, when you're looking at your – you know, Nick Bonino is the shutdown center on this team. He's the player that John Hines and previously Peter Laviolette would put up against the other top lines regularly. But I think they've shown over the past couple of years that they trust Ryan Johansson in those defensive-minded situations.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and I think the self-evaluation of Ryan Johansson says it, he's got to be better. He can be a lot better. He has been a lot better. But I would look beyond whether he ends up with 20 goals and 50 assists. He can be an effective player if this committee approach works. It's more... You know, what the eye test, is, you know, be a force in the game. He was a force in the game that they had going into the break. That was a good sign, but he's got to build upon that.
I agree. And I think, you know, what I did was I also looked at the high, you know, I looked at how he stacks up against the highest paid forwards in the league. So
that's a telling stat.
Yeah, there are 29 forwards in the NHL who have cap hits of at least $8 million. Ryan Johansson, if you sort them by points, Ryan Johansson is number 26 out of 29. And two of the players behind him, Sidney Crosby and Jeff Skinner, have been injured for significant periods of time. So the only player who's been healthy this year who has fewer points that makes that much is Jamie Benn. Now, Matt Duchene is right above Ryan Johansson, but to your point, Willie, Matt Duchene has been a lot more noticeable this year than Ryan Johansson has in terms of...
Lately especially.
So... You know, I do think that, you know, Ryan Johansson's salary, which is of no fault of his own, it's not his fault that the Predators agreed to pay him $8 million a year, but with that comes expectations, and in that regard, he hasn't met them, and when you get paid that much and you're not scoring to your capabilities, you're going to be called out by fans, and that's what's happening with Ryan right now. So that's why I wanted to take a look at what's really been going on with this season on the ice, and I think there are reasons for optimism that he can have a better second half. But, of course, he really has no choice if this team wants to make it to the playoffs again.
He's got to do it. When we come back, Chase McCabe will have some questions. A little later in the hour, we will take some phone calls. If you're out there, you follow the team, you follow the league, let's talk a little hockey here during this hour. 737-1025. Adam will be with us in studio until noon. 737-1025. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Vigan from The Athletic covers the Nashville Predators with us. We will be taking some phone calls a little bit later. this hour, 737-1025, assessing the Predators right now as the All-Star break hits. No more games before the break. And then some teams will go on the bye next week, so the Predators will have a chance to gain some ground on teams that aren't playing. They have played less games than, I believe, I'd have to double-check this, anybody in the league. Definitely, they've played the fewest games in the Western Conference.
I'm checking right now. That appears to be correct.
He's efforting.
That appears to be correct. And they do have a good opportunity. You know, the Jets just had an 0-for-3 road trip. I mean, they lost last night in Columbus. You know, the Predators are 3 points behind Winnipeg with 4 games in hand. So there is ground to be made up.
So I want to be I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just trying to be realistic. That's what I say.
He's negative.
Yeah,
that's what I say.
Why is he so negative? The way that I look at this. And coming off the All-Star break, there's optimism. You've had 6 games now with John Hines. You've made pretty much the biggest change that you can make in season. Now, I know there still could be a trade, but it's been out there that David Poile's tried to make some trades, and it just hasn't happened. So this is pretty much what you have at this point. And my whole thing is, I know there's optimism, and I'm optimistic, and maybe there's going to be a change, but you can't just snap your fingers and everything that's been an issue for this team is automatically going to be like, oh, it's gone now. They're going to win 8 in a row, make the playoffs, everybody's going to be happy. Not saying it won't happen, it's just, again, being realistic. So when you take a look at this team, I say they're not a playoff team. Just the way I've seen them play this entire season, they're not a playoff team. What can magically change in your mind? I thought the Johansson piece you did was excellent on his point, but I think it applies to other players as well, that they have to get to another level. How can John Hines be the one to make them do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you're hoping from the Predators that they have a better response to coming out of this break than they did the last one.
Yeah.
They went into the Christmas/holiday break, whatever you want to call it, riding high. You thought, is this the moment the Predators turned the corner? And instead of turning the corner, it was like those old Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner cartoons where Wile E. Coyote paints the tunnel on the side of the canyon and then runs right into it. That's basically what the Predators did. That was a really, you know, I could have explained that better. But most of you have seen those cartoons. You know what I'm talking about. They stung coming out of the break is what I'm saying. And you know, as we look around the NHL and you look at the teams ahead of the Predators, because it's not just so much that they have to play well, they need the teams in front of them to start falling. And the Winnipeg Jets, as we mentioned, is a prime example of that. They've been riding Connor Hellebuck's shoulders throughout this season. That's why they are where they are. Things are not going as well in goal for the Jets right now, and they're starting to fall apart because they weren't really a good team in other aspects. They were being covered by good goaltending, and now that the goaltending is dried up, the results are what they are. But you look at the teams ahead of them. In the wild card, Arizona number one, Vegas number two. Then you've got Winnipeg, Chicago, and Minnesota. All of those teams have their issues. All of those teams are capable of struggling, and the Predators are just as capable of figuring it out. But if I'm not mistaken, the Predators have not won more than 2 consecutive games since late October. So there is a lot riding against them in terms of should we have the confidence in them to figure it out. And there are two things that I've seen from the Predators in the past 5 games, because I throw out the game against Boston when I talk about John Hines, just because that was the day he was hired. He got in that morning. He had no time to implement anything.
Right.
Dan Muse and Dan Lambert were basically coaching that game, and John Hines was observing. One, there has
been, and everybody was dealing with the aftershock of Peter Laviolette.
And they were playing
fired.
Boston, which is a great team. One, there appears to be a renewed commitment by the team to getting to the high percentage scoring areas. I believe every 5-on-5 goal they've scored in the past 5 games can be classified as high danger according to Natural Stat Trick. And their definition might be different than others, but according to their definition, every single one of their 5-on-5 goals, if I'm not mistaken, has been a high-danger goal, which has been an issue for the Predators, getting to the slot, getting in front of the crease, you know, the home plate area, the house, whatever you want to call it. Peter Laviolette called it Zone 1. They have had a hard time getting to those areas, and they've shown a commitment to the middle of the ice on both ends, which John Hines has hammered since he was hired. The second thing is they're getting better goaltending. You know, Pecorine and UC Saros over the past five games have played incredibly well in terms of their overall save percentage, both overall at 5-on-5 and the high danger save percentage. Now, some of it might be unsustainable, and the Predators have done a better job of, you know, stacking the slot in terms of making sure they have a lot of bodies there so those loose pucks, those second-chance opportunities aren't so easily picked up by the opposition. But if this team gets better goaltending, that fixes a lot of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if it becomes league average goaltending, I think this team is in a better spot. It doesn't need to be as high as it is now, and it probably won't be. I think their 5-on-5 save percentage in the last five games is like 95. Like, that's not gonna continue. But the special teams needs to get better, particularly the penalty kill. So there are a lot of things that need to get better, but there are signs of optimism. I'm just cautiously optimistic because I thought they had turned a corner before Christmas, and then everything has happened since.
Yep. I think you make good points about coming off the break, because I'm just going to be honest with you. I am scared to death on Monday night. I just am. And that's based upon what I've seen from this team in the past, and that's what I have to go on.
And the Maple Leafs have fallen on hard times as well.
Yeah.
A lot of the teams in front of them in the standings, the Florida Panthers, who I think have won six consecutive games after they beat the Blackhawks. I think they might have played last night, actually. I don't remember. You know, Philadelphia, Columbus is on a roll right now.
Columbus is on a ridiculous roll
right
now.
And then, of course, you've got Tampa, who's been playing really well lately. Boston's been good for most of the year. So Toronto is out of a playoff spot at the break.
Yeah, you think you're scared to death. Like, all the discussions we're having about the Predators, multiplied by, like, three on the panic meter, and then you have Toronto, right?
Now, that's are we converting to the metric scale with that? Like, what is it? Multiply by three.
They do
in the
use
United
the metric
States.
System so, above the border.
So is it like 5.9? Do you multiply it by like 5.9? I don't know how the metric system
we
works.
We got into this the Celsius Fahrenheit thing, too. Sometimes it is confusing.
But I'm looking at the
standings. But that is going to be a really compelling. It's an interesting opponent to have coming out because they're in the same boat, right? They're like, wait a minute. We're supposed to be cruising along here. What's the deal? We're below the line. We got to catch some teams. What's happening? Now, Austin Matthews will miss the All-Star game. Does that mean by rule he has to miss Monday's game?
Here's the caveat. Austin Matthews is still going to St. Louis to participate in the All-Star festivities.
Uh-huh.
So because of that, he will not be suspended. Now, of course, for those who aren't listening,
is Ovechkin going to be suspended?
Yes, he's not going. So the rule is if a player skips the All-Star game, I think for any reason or non-injury related?
I don't know the specifics.
I don't know the specifics either, but I think it might be non-injury related.
Right. It's just to try to prevent people from saying, I'm taking the weekend
off. Can I say this, though? That's a dumb rule.
It's pretty silly.
You
got to
have your best players play.
Number one, All-Star games in mid-season, and I know they don't necessarily have a choice. I think that's dumb. It's an exhibition game. It's just it was an awesome thing when it was here, but to punish a player because they want to preserve their body because of the run, I got a problem
right
with that.
So the rule is that if a player actively chooses to skip the All-Star game, just, you know, like Alex Ovechkin has done it for the past, I think, past 2 years, just saying, I want to rest up, all this, that, the other thing, they either have to sit out of the game right before the All-Star break or the first game after the All-Star break. But because Austin Matthews is going to St. Louis and is going to shake hands and kiss babies and sign autographs, he will not be suspended. And based on the reports from Toronto yesterday, this nagging wrist injury is not going to prevent him from playing on Monday. So expect Austin Matthews to play on Monday.
How convenient. how convenient. So, okay, here's the other part of this. And I'm not, you know, I want to see this team make the playoffs. I do. But I don't want to see them barely get in and then get knocked out in five games. I don't think anybody wants to see that. So what is the balance of, does David Poile need to be a buyer-ish at the deadline? Does he need to tweak? I don't think he needs to stand pat. I think he needs to do something. And I'm not ready to say blow it up. I maybe do that, you know, do some more of that, bigger trades in the offseason. But again, I want to see this team actually be competitive if they get in. And right now, I mean, if they get in as the last team in the second wild card, they're not beating St. Louis.
Crazier things have happened.
St. Louis won two game sevens. They beat the Stars in overtime maybe double overtime in Game 7?
I think it was double overtime. And, yeah. And don't forget that last year all of us were enjoying a nice night out at the ballpark in Dallas. Well, Arlington specifically, when the Columbus Blue Jackets completed their sweep of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Preds beat Chicago
So anything can happen.
You never know.
To answer your question, I feel that if the Predators continue to kind of occupy this bubble space that they're in right now, I think David Poile needs to be both a soft seller and a soft buyer. And what I mean by that is, first of all, David Poile's recent track record of big trade deadline moves has not been good. We need to put that out there. Ryan Hartman, Wayne Simmonds, Mikhail Granlund. You know, you can go back to 2015, Cody Franzen, Mike Santarelli. It just has not been. He's a better mid-season, like early season or summertime trader than he is a deadline trader, just based on recent history. But what I mean by that is I don't think this team should just sell off every asset, but I do believe that this team should trade at least one player on an expiring contract. And to me, the player that makes the most sense is Mikhail Granlund.
Completely agree.
I mean, Craig Smith, his name has also been out there, but I feel like Craig Smith has started to play really well. I mean, since
he's played well all season.
I would agree with that. Since that road trip right before Christmas, starting with those games in New York, he's been playing really well. And he's among the best players in the league at generating shots at even strength. Mikhail Granlund, for whatever reason, just hasn't been a fit here. And I think you can probably get a mid-round draft pick and or a mid-level prospect for Mikhail Granlund. And that would allow you to have a space in your lineup on a regular basis for Colin Blackwell or Yakov Trenin, players who I feel like have come in and done a really nice job in more limited roles. I also do think that there needs to be perhaps a soft buy. And what I mean by that is don't go out and get the big fish in the pond, so to speak. This team, in my opinion, needs at least one veteran defenseman.
I would agree.
Preferably right-handed so that that defenseman can play with Matias Ekholm. Not that that defenseman or Matias Ekholm can't play on their offhand, but if you're looking for the left-right balance, particularly right-handed.
And put Favreau back on the third pair?
Bingo. And the Predators have extra second and third round picks in this year's draft. So they do have draft capital if they're looking to trade for a defenseman. There are three players that come to mind off the top of my head. They're not the sexiest. They're not the most exciting, but I do think they fill a need. Two of them have played for John Hines and the New Jersey Devils, who are probably going to be selling significantly. Sammy Vatanen and Andy Green. And the other one is Brendan Dillon of the San Jose Sharks. I think perhaps I'll look more deeply into this for a story on The Athletic, ding, ding, ding. But I do think that a veteran defenseman would be a really great help for this team in the stretch run.
I think the seats on the bus reference, right, or the seats on the plane makes a lot of sense there. Dante Fabro is being asked a lot in his rookie year to play on the second pair. He would be in a perfect seat for a strong third pair.
Which we saw from him when he got here.
Absolutely. And then if you could find that guy who fits on the bus, who could play that number four spot, and knock on wood, you got to have Ryan Ellis back. And that's a big, we don't know when that's going to happen. That has been a huge thing that they have tried to overcome. When we come back, we're going to continue the discussion. We would love to get you involved. Call or text, right, Chase?
Yes, I got the text ready to go.
So we want questions. Let's call it a poor man's mailbag.
Because
Adam
likes
to do this on the Athletic. He has his mailbag once a week. We're having our mailbag here, our text bag. 615-737.
Doesn't have the same ring to it.
It doesn't really have the same ring to it, does it? Okay, we'll sort this out. We're coming back. We've got Bicycle Boy on the line. He's going to lead off the discussion. So call or text 615-737-1025. Chase, you're excited about this theme song. Fill us in here.
It's Motorhead, and it's for Adam, but he missed it, and now he hears it. He knows it. Evolution. It's a wrestling theme, but Motorhead, you know, did it. So
It's usually my default guess that comes from wrestling somewhere.
You know, Adam appreciates the masters of the squared circle like I do, so.
I do.
All right, now, we want to get some people involved in the discussion. Make Adam feel at home. Let's see if we can get the text line going here. 615-737-1025.
I invite all questions about Zion Williamson.
That would be
or
fine.
Or Preds. But,
we would probably stick to hockey, but we'll see.
Fine. Or you can imagine Zion Williamson playing hockey, though?
I can think of, you know, people have brought up Derrick Henry playing hockey. It's been funny to think about that.
He would definitely be the heaviest player in NHL history.
Can Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry join the Preds, you know, for the stretch run? Can we do that?
Well, they need to at least channel some of that mojo that those guys got going in the latter portion of the season.
Anyway.
All right, 737-1025. Let's start with Bicycle Boy. We're talking Predators until high noon. Bicycle Boy, welcome to the show.
Morning, fellas. I got two quick questions, and before that, Adam, I couldn't agree more about the feeling that we turned the corner before the Christmas break. In fact, I went out and even bought more Preds gear, and now we're back to frustration.
So, yeah, you know what was interesting about that before you asked your question, Bicycle Boy? They went 4-0-1 during that stretch. They went on the road trip, went 3-0-1, then came back home right before Christmas and beat a very good Arizona team. But in that stretch, while they had success with the results, there were some games where they really didn't play very well. Like, it wasn't like they really got into the groove and played outstanding hockey. They gutted their way out. They made some big plays. But you could still sort of say, you know, I want to see the groove. And then, as you said on the other side, then all of a sudden they reverted back to when they've been at their worst. You know, the problems within the game, the adversity where it snowballs, and all of a sudden they're giving up goals in bunches.
Yeah,
would you agree with that? I mean, it was a great feeling.
I would.
Because they beat some very good teams in there. They won against the Islanders where everything went their way after a certain point, but they were getting dominated in that game for a while.
And I'd like to toot my own horn here, but after that game against the New York Islanders, the story I wrote for the following day, the headline was, consecutive road wins are encouraging, but can these Predators be trusted? So... Can they?
Well, that was a good one.
You look at the shot counter about midway through each of those games, and it was like 21-9 or 21-11. Then all of a sudden, boom, they made, to their credit, they can make plays. Right?
That Islanders game was the perfect example.
It's really the flow, the consistent flow of playing the system is what they've got to try to find.
Yes.
All right, Bicycle Boy, let's look ahead.
Yeah, well, you're right, Billy. Willie, I guess I just tend to be a glasses half full kind of guy. But
Me too.
So My question is, I hadn't heard the terms of Coach Hines' contract, whether it was just a year-to-year and how much the Devils are having to pick up from that. And then I'm pretty sure this next year, this next draft is going to be the expansion draft, right?
Next summer, the summer of 2021.
So after next year.
Is UC Soros exempt from that, Adam?
Yes. No, he's not.
No.
Sorry.
Okay, so we don't have to worry about who to protect and who not.
That will happen next summer, so you don't have to worry about that yet, Bicycle Boy.
Yeah. Okay, well, how about Coach Hines' contract?
That's a good question, and that's something, you know, honestly, I admit that I have not looked into that yet, which I should have. There was just a lot going on around that time. But I do believe that... I think Elliot Freeman may, and you can ask Elliot Freeman this because you're going to have him on later, right? I do believe that the Devils have to pay off the rest of this year, and the Predators pay off. I mean, and the Predators pay the rest. I'm not sure exactly how it works with a coach who gets fired midseason.
I do think there is usually some offsetting.
Yes,
right.
That's what I was looking
if you get
for.
Another job, it offsets what you were going to get paid. So it's a good question. I think the real question, regardless of what they're paying him or who's paying him, is there a commitment? How long is the commitment?
Yeah.
You know, this is like college basketball where you get a 4-year deal. Like, he's not the interim coach, right? He has been named the head coach.
Yes.
So I would think that would indicate that, you know, they'd like to see him keep the job, you know, indefinitely.
Yes.
So to speak. But yeah. I don't know if you can – I don't know the answer to his question.
I currently do not know the answer, but I will endeavor to find out for you, Bicycle Boy.
All right, Chase, you have
questions.
We have
some texts. They have flooded in. There is a flood right now of texts. Include your name so I can give you credit for asking the question.
Yeah.
So 615-737-1025. No name here, but I think it's a good question. Do the Predators miss PK Subban?
In some aspects, I think they do. I think you've seen in New Jersey that, you know, he is not the defenseman that he used to be. Now, of course, the caveat is that that team stinks. So everyone looks is going to look extra bad when your team is extra bad. But, you know, the one thing about PK Subban is that he did a really good job of defending the other team's top players mm-hmm. on a nightly basis. I mean, he's not the player he was when he was winning the Norris Trophy or when he was traded to the Predators in June of 2016. He's not as fleet of foot. He's had to deal with some injuries, but he can still be an effective shutdown type defenseman.
Yeah, and there's a reason he was making $9 million yes. and has been a Norris Trophy guy. They knew that they were going to put themselves in the situation they're in right now. In the past, think about this, Adam, when they were missing one of the four, it's a lot easier to piece your defensive lineup together with three of the four than just two of the four, which is what they're trying to scrape yes. by with it. So I think that's when – that's my answer to the question is they have really missed him just having that experienced guy who's getting paid to be a top defenseman when Ryan Ellis has been out.
Yeah, I think – this is the time, you're right, Willie, when you would really need a PK Subban, when you're missing Ryan Ellis for an indefinite period of time. And so overall, do I think they miss him? I don't, but I think that he certainly, certain aspects of his play are missed. Overall, though, I think they've done okay without him.
Another one, no name.
Come on, no
here.
Name.
What is the future of Austin
Watson?
Do we
Watson? Even have initials? Anything?
No.
Well, Austin.
Nickname?
No.
No name. Nothing? No name is just, you know, he's flooding the text line. He or she is flooding the text line. Give someone else
can,
a chance
I
to
I
can
ask give out their number, but I don't think they'd like that, so I'm
no.
not going to do that.
Anyway, the future
give
of
the last two numbers.
Yes.
56.
The future right. of Austin Watson is a good question because he signed a contract extension earlier this season, and it appears that he is the first odd man out of the John Hines era. Of course, he did play in the last game before the break against Buffalo, but...
And played well. He started.
Yes.
And I thought, did everything he could to say, I've been out, I want to make an impact on this game.
Yes. So, you know, Yakov Trenin did a really great job when he was up here, and I'm not going to be surprised if he gets recalled after the break. I mean, he's an AHL All-Star. I'm not sure when the AHL All-Star game is. It might be this weekend. I don't know. But he's an AHL All-Star. And I think he acquitted himself well in the role that he was playing with the Predators. So, you know, that's a good question. Austin Watson, you know, if you're looking at the fancy stats, as I like to call them, has not had a good year at all. You know, something to consider is that considering his deployment, you know, offensive zone start percentage, all of those fancy things, you know, he's sort of behind the eight ball to start because he's not getting favorable matchups. But he has not been as effective defensively as he has been in previous years. So I look at Trenin, and I think I said this when I was in the studio with you recently, Chase, with Darren, is that I think what you're seeing from Yakov, what you saw from Yakov Trenin during his, you know, his run with the Predators recently is what they're hoping to get out of Austin Watson,
yeah.
and they haven't.
Right.
So if Trenin can do the job better than Austin, then Trenin's going to be in the lineup and Austin's going to be watching.
It's interesting. They have depth at forward. They have options now, especially with Colin Blackwell's emergence as well. And I agree 100%. I think the eye test would match up with Austin Watson's underlying numbers, too. He has been better before. He chips in. He's chipped in more offensively before. He's been a shorthanded force before. You know, I think he's working extremely hard, but almost, you know, you talk to some people, almost he's trying too hard. You know, so I think that there's a better Austin Watson out there, but the question is who are the best 12 forwards to utilize in this arsenal they have with Blackwell and Trenin becoming guys you're like, boy, that fourth line looks pretty good
and
with Blackwell and Trenin.
And the interesting decision that's going to happen right out of the All-Star break is where do they put Colton Sissons?
That's another factor.
Because he's on the conditioning assignment with the Admirals right now.
And he's the guy you got to have in there.
Right. And who do you take out? I mean, Colin Blackwell has played really well. He's
he
found a role. You know, Colton Sissons has done it for longer than Colin Blackwell, but Colton hasn't, similarly to Austin, hasn't had his finest season either. So do you disrupt what's been working with Colin Blackwell just to put Colton Sissons back in, or does someone that we don't think of who hasn't been playing well come out for Colton Sissons? Or does Colton Sissons have to work his way back in? Because if I'm not mistaken, he hasn't played for John Hines yet, right? He was injured beforehand.
Correct.
So he's got to
miss the classic.
He got injured in the first game out of that Christmas break.
Right.
And he is a guy that is not a headliner, but he is a very important glue guy on the team.
Yes.
When we come back, we'll have more questions.
Do we have
more texts?
We have a lot more texts.
Oh, this is exciting. Isn't this great to have the text line? 615-737-1025. Adam Vingan from The Athletic is in the studio with us. We're talking Predators. Stay tuned. So Purple Haze, not to be confused with Jimmy Haze or Kevin Haze.
That's true.
Or Gritty, by the way.
By Jimi Hendrix, not to be confused with Matt Hendrix.
Has Gritty been freed yet, by the way?
The best part about that story, if you go and read the Philadelphia Inquirer story, is that it's phrased as if, though, Gritty is the sentient being and not a person in a costume. It's like, you know, I tweeted out a screenshot of this great part of that story.
Right. By the way, the story is apparently he got too excited with a 13-year-old kid and apparently caused bruises. You know, he was roughhousing something, and the kid was hurt?
He got punched in the
allegedly.
Back. Allegedly. But there's a line in the story that says, quote, efforts to reach Gritty were unsuccessful as of Wednesday afternoon, to which I said, this is a sentence we all strive to write when we enter journalism school. It's like we haven't been able to reach the mascot. But it's interesting because Gritty is written as if though Gritty is his own person. It's not a person in a costume. It's just Gritty is who he is.
Is Nash his lawyer?
Right.
Do we know that?
I have to imagine the Philly Fanatic has been sued multiple times, so this is not the first time that a Philadelphia-based mascot's probably been in trouble with the law.
Only in Philly. All right, we have texts.
We have a ton of texts, so let's try and run through
that. Rapid fire.
Chris Domino will join us at high noon from 680 The Fan in Atlanta. We'll bounce some things off of him, and then Elliot Friedman will join us at 1.
All right, this is Melissa from Gallatin. I know we've talked a lot about Johansson and him needing to step up. I agree. In your opinion, what other 3 or 4 players are you looking to see more out of this season for the Preds?
Everybody but Ryan Ellison, Roman Josi, basically. Victor Arvidsson comes to mind as someone who I would like to see more from. I mean, Mikael Granlund if he's on this team for the rest of the season, somebody else.
How about the goalies?
The goalies, of course.
They got to be great.
Right, the goalies have to be great, and we talked about that. But in terms of forwards, you know, Victor Arvidsson comes to mind. I know he was hurt for a month. But he just hasn't had the same oomph to his game recently, I think, as he's shown in previous years. I would say Victor Arvidsson, both goaltenders, and Mikael Granlund are 3 or 4 players that come to the top of my head.
This one to the text line, he's G Pander on Twitter, but with the change in systems with the new coach and John Hines, should the Predators look for a stay-at-home, larger defenseman similar to Shea Weber to help protect the net?
Well, it sort of goes back to what we were talking to about adding a veteran defenseman. Now, if you feel that defenseman needs to be more physical, you know, the term stay-at-home defenseman doesn't really apply to the NHL anymore. There are very few of those players now. I mean, I feel like Matthias Ekholm is an example of a new-age stay-at-home defenseman or a defensive defenseman, in that he is very talented at stopping the top players on the other team, but he also has offensive skill. Shea Weber is the perfect example.
You got to be able to move the puck.
Yes, there aren't very many Hal Gills in the NHL anymore, and I say that with all love and respect to Hal Gill because he's a Stanley Cup champion and can kick my butt. But there aren't very many defensemen like Hal Gill.
I've been checked into the boards. I can tell you, yeah, it hurts.
Yes,
Spencer has a couple of questions.
One question, Spencer.
Is there a thought of acquiring some larger forwards for the John Hines system that fits that? And then he says, are the Preds in the market for a solid alternative at goaltender?
This is just me, but I can't imagine a scenario where they acquire another goaltender. First of all, Pecorine has a full no movement clause, so he's not going anywhere. And they're not. And Saros is too young to quote unquote give up on. I mean, there are going to be goalies available. I just don't see it. You look what the Rangers are doing right now. They have three goaltenders. It's not an ideal situation to carry three goaltenders. It's very awkward. So I don't think that's the right thing. And bigger forwards for John Hines, maybe. But we saw the Predators emphasize size last trade deadline by acquiring Brian Boyle and Wayne Simmonds, and it did not have the desired effect. So I don't think this team necessarily needs to acquire something up front. I think it needs, if a player needs to be added to this roster, I think it needs to be on the back end.
One guy is asking you for a job. So
a job?
Does, let's see, Rusty.
A job doing what? Though, like cleaning up Adam's garbage, or you know, taking the garbage out of
my puppy Pretzel does need a dog walker. So if he's okay with walking Pretzel, who's a social media superstar,
Rusty wants to know, what do you see as the problems with the Preds at home? Is it just a consequence of them not playing well overall? I think that's a good question.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, it's hard to say whether there's anything wrong with the way they're playing structurally or tactically at home. It's just that I feel like this team needs a kick in the butt to get started at home sometimes. Before, we would see this team come right out of the gates and overwhelm opponents on home ice. Now I feel like they need to be punched in the mouth first before they get going. And I think you've seen that more often than not this year. I think you saw it in the Ducks game most recently. They needed to get down, 3-0 before they really started, you know, playing.
Which they really didn't.
But
not on that night. But I think you're absolutely right. I think one of the things that John Hines emphasized is, how do you get the crowd involved in your game? You know, make those energy plays. You know, use the crowd. But the crowd, you have to do the right things. You can't ease into the game. So there's been a number of games where they've put themselves in a hole. It's just that edge, that killer instinct out of the gate is very, very important, especially at home.
Yes, and when this team has been at its best over the past several years, that's what they're doing at home. They just haven't done it anywhere near as much.
Could you see Cali Yarncroak being taken out for Colton Sissons? I would not agree with that.
Well, Cali has slowed down recently, but I think he's an important part of this team as well. So that's a good question. It's worth exploring, perhaps at theathletic.com, which you can subscribe to now and keep an eye on it.
You know, it is interesting that in that last game, they split Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson. Those were two guys that were trying to get going, really, in the last two games. The forgettable performance against the Ducks, it did seem like the only line that had anything going at all was Grimaldi and Arvidsson with Bonino.
Yes.
Then Arvidsson stayed with them, and they put Cali Yarncroak and Craig Smith with Ryan Johansson.
Right.
Yarncroak has gone, 7 or 8 games now without a point. He was on a record pace, which you kind of felt like these things kind of go up and down. I mean, he's not going to turn into Wayne Gretzky. He'll probably come back around and have a nice run here. But I do wonder if they have thoughts of trying Trenin a little higher up in the lineup, somewhere in there, just as they try to create the four best lines they can. They may not be done tinkering.
No, and to answer your question, Cali Yarncroak has gone 9 consecutive games without a point.
And he can help you win without scoring. He's a guy that you're not saying he has to score to be good. There's some other guys on here that do need to be moving the needle offensively.
I have to read one more. Please thank Adam for mentioning the no-trade clause for Rene. Hopefully some of the people I sit next to are listening, so they'll stop swearing that he's going to be traded as soon as humanly possible. Smiley face, Jen.
All right, Jen. I'm doing my public service for you, so you can tell your seat neighbors to shut their traps, because Peck is not going anywhere.
All right, Adam. Last question. As we leave you, what is your plan for All-Star Weekend? You got any plans before we get back to the action on Monday night?
No major plans. Just doing some tidying up around the house and running some errands that I neglect this kind of week for me is just like, do all the things that you can't do because you work so much
in the grind,
right? So like, I went to the doctor a couple days
just
ago,
laid back. Yeah,
and I've been running some errands and doing and picking up dry cleaning. I lead a very exciting life.
Okay, well, Adam, we will talk to you soon. Thanks for the time today.
Anytime, guys.
All right, Adam Bingen covers the Nashville Predators for The Athletic. When we come back, We'll talk to Chris Domino. We'll get a little Atlanta flavor. Chase is very excited about
Braves.
The Braves. We'll talk to him about sign stealing and Hall of Fame stuff. He's got some great perspective on this. This will be good stuff. Stay tuned. Third hour coming up next here on 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves. You're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit NCL.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line ships registry the Bahamas and USA.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.